From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
We are not natural-born enemies with Iran. It is only the behavior of the Iranian government that continues to interfere in the internal affairs of other countries, particularly our Arab countries, including our own, that is causing us to take this position.
That was the permanent representative of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia to the United Nations, Abdullah bin Yahya al-Mualimi, at a press stakeout at the UN headquarters in New York Monday, after the UN Security Council urged Iran and Saudi Arabia to refrain from further escalating tensions after the Saudi kingdom was joined by Bahrain, Sudan, and the United Arab Emirates in either canceling or reducing diplomatic relations with the Islamic Republic. Tensions have been running high between Riyadh and Tehran over the crises in Syria and Iraq, the Saudis' 10-month-long bombing campaign against Yemen, and the kingdom's opposition to the Islamic Republic's recent deal with the P5+1 group, among other hot-point issues. But the Saudi ambassador's claim of Iranian interference in the internal affairs of its neighbors rang hollow for many, who point out that the Saudis are occupying Bahrain, waging war against Yemen, and backing numerous terrorist groups on the ground in Libya, Syria, Iraq, and elsewhere. Press TV's Reza Golzadeh has more.
In its anti-Iran comments over the past couple of days, Saudi Arabia has accused Tehran of supporting terrorism, but many find the accusations from the Saudi side self-defeating, as Riyadh is widely believed to be sponsoring Takfiri extremists in the Middle East. Few people are now doubtful that the kingdom is responsible for the creation of the Al-Qaeda terrorist organization, which gave birth to hundreds of terror groups, including Daesh. Saudi Arabia openly supports militants trying to topple the Syrian government, and it's accused of orchestrating terror attacks, which claim civilian lives daily across Iraq. It sent its troops to neighboring Bahrain to crush a pro-democracy movement. Saudi Arabia has waged a bloody war on its other neighbor, Yemen, killing some 7,400 people in the past 10 months since its war began. Saudi Arabia's rights record is no better. The Saudi government shows zero tolerance towards dissent, with Sheikh Nimr being one of the latest victims of the crackdown. And it is now struggling to deal with the fallout from its repression of opposition in the kingdom. Despite criticizing Saudi Arabia over the execution of Sheikh Nimr, its Western backers and allies, most notably the US and Britain, have stopped short of taking any genuine measures to force Riyadh into changing its policy towards the region and on dissent inside the kingdom.
At the Security Council Monday, despite the general call for de-escalation and condemnation of the attacks in Tehran on the Saudi embassy, there was no action taken over the mass public beheadings conducted last Friday by the Saudis, which incited the incident in Tehran. Earlier, Iran's permanent representative to the UN had said that the protesters who entered the Saudi embassy did so despite police efforts to stop them. Ambassador Ghulam Ali Khosrou said the Islamic Republic will arrest and prosecute the individuals involved in the incident. The Security Council's call for de-escalation was repeated in Washington Monday by White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest.
We're urging all sides to show some restraint and to not further inflame tensions that are on quite vivid display in the region.
Despite the call from Washington, however, Kuwait announced early Tuesday it too is breaking diplomatic relations with Iran. The growing dispute between the Saudi kingdom and the Islamic Republic was also the subject of most of Monday's daily press briefing at the U.S. State Department. We'll bring you that in its entirety later in this newscast. Supporters of Venezuela's socialist revolution marched through the streets of Caracas Tuesday in an expression of support for President Nicolas Maduro and grassroots popular power as the new National Assembly took office for the first time in 17 years under the control of right-wing political parties. Leaders of the incoming right-wing coalition have signaled that they intend to reform or revoke key pieces of legislation passed by the socialists, prompting grassroots organizations to mobilize in defense of gains made over the past decade and a half. The coalition has threatened to revoke price controls that keep basic goods affordable, give foreign companies concessions for infrastructure and other work, and privatize key enterprises and services, including public media. Six fighters who attacked an Indian airbase near the India-Pakistan border Saturday night have been neutralized. That, according to India's defense minister, Manohar Parrikar, Tuesday. He added that a four-day-long search and combing operation to secure the compound was still underway. The bodies of 21 refugees, including three children who had tried to cross the Aegean Sea from Turkey to Greece, washed up on the Turkish coastline at two locations. 11 of the bodies were discovered on the shoreline in the district of Eyvalık, while 10 others were found in the Dikili area following rough weather. The Turkish Coast Guard reported rescuing several additional travelers in distress. An explosion was reported Tuesday in the Afghan city of Jalalabad near the consulates of India, Pakistan, and Iran, that according to a spokesperson for the provincial governor, Atullah Kugyani. Reuters reported early Tuesday that there had been no casualties or damage known thus far. The target of the attack was not immediately known, and as of Tuesday, no one had claimed responsibility. However, the blast followed an attack on the Indian consulate in Mazar-i-Sharif, Afghanistan, on Sunday, with Afghan special forces killing a group of insurgents who were holed up in a house there Monday, ending a 24-hour standoff. Monday's State Department press briefing was largely focused on this past Friday's public beheading of 47 people in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the attacks by protesters against Saudi embassies in Iran and elsewhere that resulted from public outrage, in particular over the beheading of cleric Sheikh Namir Bakir al-Namir for his nonviolent resistance to the Saudis' medieval system. State Department spokesperson John Kirby began the briefing with a statement on the situation.
The United States is concerned about rising tensions in the Middle East, of course, following recent executions in Saudi Arabia, attacks on Saudi diplomatic properties in Iran, and the cutting or downgrading by a number of countries of their diplomatic ties with Iran. We call on all sides to avoid any actions that would further heighten tensions in the region. Regarding the executions in Saudi Arabia, we continue to urge the government of Saudi Arabia to ensure fair and transparent judicial proceedings in all cases. And we have expressed our particular concern over the execution of Shia cleric Nimr al-Nimr. We also condemn the attacks on Saudi diplomatic properties in Iran. We take attacks on diplomatic facilities, as you might imagine, very seriously. We note reports that some of the perpetrators of these attacks have been arrested, and we urge the government of Iran to fully respect its international obligations to protect diplomatic property. On the severing of diplomatic ties, we continue to believe that diplomatic engagement and direct conversations are essential to work through differences. Increased friction runs counter to the interests of all those in the international community who support moderation, peace, and stability. We reiterate the need for leaders throughout the region to redouble efforts aimed at de-escalating regional tensions. In this context, over the past day or so, Secretary Kerry and senior State Department officials have been in communication with several regional leaders. We have consistently urged everyone to de-escalate tensions in the region so that we can all continue to work on resolving the pressing issues in Iraq, Syria, in Yemen, and elsewhere throughout the Middle East. Ultimately, solutions to problems in this region must come from leaders in this region. So while we continue to make all efforts to facilitate dialogue, the impetus is on local leadership to work through their differences and find the best path forward through this tension.
Most of the question and answer between the press and Kirby was also focused on the situation evolving between Saudi Arabia and Iran.
Okay. Happy New Year. On your opening statement, can you bring us up to date with a bit more specificity as to who the secretary and others have actually spoken to as it relates to the Saudi-Iran situation?
Well, I think, he has talked to Foreign Minister Zarif. He has talked to the Deputy Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. And he has also talked to other Saudi leaders. And I would also point out that that was good. I just unbugged a bunch of others. That it isn't just the secretary making phone calls and staying in touch. Our ambassador has been in touch with Saudi officials there in Saudi Arabia, and of course, Assistant Secretary Ann Patterson has been in communication with several leaders in the region. So, as I said in my opening statement, it's not just Secretary Kerry; it's other senior State Department officials here.
Okay, but as far as you know, he has not yet spoken to Foreign Minister Jubair.
I'm not going to read out every conversation. I know that the Saudi press agency is.
The White House said that they expected Secretary Kerry to speak to Foreign Minister.
I think, look, he has routine and regular conversations with Foreign Minister Al-Jubair, and you know, I certainly wouldn't be surprised if. You know, if he communicates with the foreign minister as well.
All right. In terms of the three things that you were talking about, the proximate cause and effect from this weekend in terms of the tensions between the two countries, you said you continue to urge the government of Saudi Arabia, as it regards the executions, you said you would continue to urge the government of Saudi Arabia to uphold due process, but, you know, maintain people's rights. Do you believe that these executions followed a transparent and fair legal process?
I'm not going to characterize each and every one of the 47 cases, and I'm not going to offer, you know, a broad characterization of the accumulation of them all in one day. I think, as I said at the outset, we've been very clear about our concerns about the legal process in Saudi Arabia. It's something that that we have talked to Saudi officials about before. We will continue to do so. What I would also just add is that we continue to call on the government of Saudi Arabia to respect and protect human rights and to permit the peaceful expression of dissent, and to work together with all community leaders to diffuse tensions. So, go ahead.
Sorry.
No,
sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm just curious as to why the next sentence after what you said when you addressed the attacks on the embassies, you say that you condemn the attacks on the Saudi diplomatic facilities. Why not condemn the executions?
Well, I would just tell you what I said before. We have expressed our concerns about the legal process in Saudi Arabia. We've raised those concerns with the Saudi government. We will continue to do that. What we want to see is for Saudi Arabia to respect and protect human rights and to ensure a fair and transparent judicial process.
You won't condemn the executions. Is that right?
I think
your White House colleague was asked this pretty much the same thing, and he replied, "We certainly would condemn any country that carries out mass executions." Does that mean that you're condemning the Saudis for doing this?
I've answered the question.
You haven't answered it. I mean, you've answered it to your satisfaction, but I don't think you've answered it to the satisfaction of anybody else, because you won't use the same words that you do with Iran and the attacks on the Saudi embassy as you do with the executions.
Well, I mean, they're two different issues. I mean, the Saudi embassy came under attack. We have, in the past, I've been very clear about attacks on diplomatic facilities. You can imagine why the State Department takes a special interest in that. And this was it doesn't matter what country, an attack on a diplomatic facility is a concern to us, whether it's ours or somebody else's.
The Iranians, there's a history in Iran of attacks on diplomatic facilities dating back many, many years. And this building is all too aware of what happened in 1979 and the year, more than a year, that came after that. So, in his conversation with Foreign Minister Zarif, did the Secretary make it clear, in no uncertain terms, that these attacks were a breach of international law and that Iran has an obligation to protect both diplomatic facilities and diplomats?
Well, without getting into the specifics of the conversation, clearly the issue of increased tensions and potential more violence certainly came up. And the Secretary expressed the same views that I've expressed here to you today on behalf of the State Department about our concern over the attacks on this facility.
All right, then the last one. On the downgrading or cutting of relations, are we to assume from your comments saying that you're calling on all sides that you take a dim view of the severing of diplomatic relations or downgrading of diplomatic relations?
I think what you can take away from this is that we believe in the power of engagement and direct conversation and strong bilateral relations, and we encourage those relations and that engagement to continue. We believe in diplomatic engagement. We would like to see diplomatic engagement continue.
So you would like to see the Saudis change there and the Bahrainis and the UAE.
Each of these
These
are sovereign decisions that nations make. And I'm not going to parse or characterize each decision that some of these countries made. And they have to make these decisions for themselves. It's not for us to cast judgment on those decisions. That said, we believe in the power of diplomatic engagement when and where it's possible, and we believe that it can help reduce tensions. That's what we want to see happen.
So, John, can I follow up on that one? when you say the diplomatic relations, what we see as the U.S. role in trying to bring those? Because clearly the tensions have caused such a division that it's almost irreparable at this stage. What do you see the U.S.
Well, we hope it's not. We hope it's not irreparable. But as I said right at the outset in my opening statement, and it wasn't inserted there by accident, but the long-term solution to these kinds of tensions are going to be local solutions. And what our message is, through all the communication that we've had, is that we want to see tensions decreased. We want to see engagement continue or to be reinstated when and where possible, so that a better mutual understanding can occur and then that that calm can be restored. So these are ultimately issues that these countries have got to work out for themselves.
And the U.S. doesn't see a role for itself in trying to...
If you're asking if we're trying to become a mediator of all of this, the answer is no.
Well, then what happens to the issues that the U.S. is very much engaged with both these countries, as far as Syria, far as the Iran nuclear deal, many others, Yemen as well? These have all...
Right, and again, that's why I referenced Iraq, Syria, and Yemen in my opening statement. We're mindful that there are a lot of other pressing issues in the region. Not to say that the tensions here over the weekend aren't important. Obviously, they are. But there are lots of other issues in the Middle East where we need regional cooperation and regional leadership to act upon. And we don't want to see any progress that has been made or may be made on those issues affected by this, which is why, again, the Secretary, and not just the Secretary, but other State Department officials have been in communication with leaders there to try to get tensions calmed down, to try to get dialogue started or restarted so that we can focus on these other very pressing issues in the region. So I know the question is going to come up, what about Syria, where it's going? We still hope and expect meetings between the opposition group and the regime can happen this month as planned. The UN is obviously leading that effort, and the special envoy, Mr. De Mistura, is going to be working that hard this month. So our expectation is that can continue to happen. Obviously, in light of these events, we're watching it very, very closely. But what we want to see is the process, the Vienna process that was codified in that UN Security Council resolution. We want to see that continue.
John, could you tell us whether the Secretary attempted to call the Saudi foreign minister or not? Did he attempt to call him? Because there are some reports that basically the Secretary tried, but Mr. Joubert apparently was too busy to respond to the Secretary.
Without getting into the details of conversations, first of all, he talks to Foreign Minister Al-Joubert all the time.
Right.
You saw the Saudi press agency actually put a release out today that acknowledged the call with the Deputy Crown Prince. Right. I think you can fully expect that the Secretary will be in touch with Foreign Minister Al-Joubert. I don't have a call to read out to you right now, but the press reporting that that he tried and it failed, or he tried and the foreign minister, you know, wasn't available or brushed him off, is absolutely false. So they have a very strong relationship.
Isn't that unusual?
Try and call?
No, I'm not saying that, Matt. But the notion that it was rebuffed is just wrong.
No, I'm not saying rebuffed, but isn't it unusual that in such a volatile situation that the secretary would call the Iranian foreign minister and talk to him about the issue, but he does not apparently communicate with the Saudi foreign minister? Isn't that unusual?
Saeed, he communicates regularly with Foreign Minister Al-Jaber, and as I said at the outset, you can fully expect that he will have a conversation with Foreign Minister Al-Jaber. I'm just not going to read out every call that the secretary makes, certainly in a situation like this where it's very fluid. And as I said at the outset, there's constant communication now between senior State Department officials and leaders in the region, and that's going to continue. This notion that the idea that one phone call is going to somehow fix it, or one phone call is going to be the metric of success, is not realistic. I think you can expect the secretary to stay engaged in numerous conversations with numerous leaders throughout the region. And certainly Foreign Minister Al-Jaber is going to be at the top of that list.
I want to ask you about the legal system. You mentioned the Saudi legal system. Do you have how do you measure the Saudi jurisprudence in this case? I mean, what kind of legal system are they using in terms of trying people, condemning them, sentencing them, and so on? Do you have faith in their process?
I would repeat what I said to Matt. We have expressed our concerns about the legal process in Saudi. It's not like we don't have concerns. I'm not an expert on their legal system any more than I am on our own. And so I'm not going to speak to the Saudi legal system. I think you should talk to Saudi authorities about their judicial processes. What I can say is that, as I said before, we have concerns about those processes, and we have made those known privately and publicly, and will continue to do so.
Because as it seems, this anti-terror law that they implemented in 2011 really encompasses a lot of activities under that. And in fact, it has like an automatic death sentence. I mean, you could go on a demonstration like some young man who demonstrated even in Bahrain and went back to Saudi Arabia and was apparently sentenced to death. So it covers a huge area that it's really not that much of an infraction.
Well, I'm not an expert on the law, but again, broadly speaking, we have harbored concerns about their legal process. We've made those concerns known. We'll continue to do that. And you've heard me speak many times about other nations as well passing counterterrorism laws. And certainly we understand that nations have to do things to protect their people and to protect against the threat of terrorism. We do it here in the United States. But we also want to make sure that freedom of expression, freedom of dissent, freedom of peaceful assembly, freedom of the media, all those things are also preserved. And so when we have concerns about those kinds of laws, those kinds of processes, we make it known. And we're not bashful about it. We make it known privately, and we make it known publicly. And I would point you to our human rights report that came out this year. You can go to online. You can go look at what we've said about Saudi Arabia and some of our concerns with respect to human rights there.
John, regarding the execution of the cleric al-Nimr, did the U.S. have any indication, one, that he was facing execution? Was there any intelligence gathered from diplomatic channels there in Riyadh, or did this come as a surprise, as some press reports alluded or alleged over the weekend?
What I can tell you is we've been in regular contact with the Saudi government with regard to these cases. Beyond that, I'm just not going to comment on details of diplomatic discussions.
In terms of the phone call between the secretary and Foreign Minister Zarif, was the U.S. position that this attack was spontaneous, that this was a demonstration or an attack on, or an attempted attack on the Saudi embassy by ordinary citizens, or is there a belief that some perhaps in the IGRC may have ginned up this attack on the Saudi embassy?
Again, without getting into the details of the conversation, I don't think they went into any great specificity with on the attack itself. I mean, again, we've made our position known about the attack on a diplomatic facility, that one included, and I would just leave it at that.
And then finally, in terms of the Saudi decision not just to recall its staff, but also to stop all flights to and from Tehran. Is this a ratcheting up? Is this a sign that things could be getting much worse between the KSA and the Iranians?
Well, I think you need to talk to Saudi authorities about the reasoning for those decisions. As I said, these are sovereign decisions. And I'm not going to pass judgment on each and every sovereign decision that countries are making right now. What we want to see writ large, and this is why we've been in contact with so many of our partners in the region, what we want to see is the tensions reduced. We want to see dialogue restored or continued in the case, whatever case may be. And we want to see diplomatic engagement do the job that it's supposed to do, which is to foster some mutual understanding and try to get a resolution to these things peacefully, diplomatically, and without violence.
But if the U.S. wants to see a fostering of mutual understanding, why isn't Washington stepping up and trying to make that happen?
Well, I think this gets to my answer to Leslie and to what I said in my opening statement, which is we believe the best long-term solution here are solutions that come from leaders in the region. And we want to see local leadership step up and to make the right decisions moving forward, to look for ways to de-escalate the tensions, look for ways to engage, look for ways to solve these problems peacefully. While we certainly want to foster that engagement, I don't think it's – I think you can all understand that that real long-term sustainable answers aren't going to be legislated from Washington, D.C.
Well, let's be realistic. These two countries are probably the most powerful countries in the region right now. Do you expect, for example, the Egyptian government to be the one to try to mediate some sort of truce between the two?
I think you're approaching this you're approaching it from a different perspective, at least than what we are. We're not in the market for a mediator here. What we want to see are the countries involved to work through these issues peacefully and through dialogue. That's what we want to see. We want to see these kinds of tensions solved bilaterally. And we recognize that it's obviously, given recent events, it's bigger than just Saudi Arabia and Iran right now. I understand that. But we really want these nations to work through these issues themselves. We're not looking for a referee.
Well, I promise this is my last one. Moscow has already suggested that it might try to take on the role of mediator, of trying to get Tehran and Riyadh to work through what has happened in the past 72 hours. Is that a concern? Does the U.S. welcome that sort of intervention?
Well, I would let Moscow speak for itself and for President Putin to speak to what his intentions are. Diplomatic engagement, that involves some sovereign decisions. I think we've been very clear about what we want to see happen. And I can only speak for the United States.
Thanks.
Undersecretary Stengel met today with the Saudi Minister of Information. Can you give us a readout?
This was a meeting, yes. Undersecretary Stengel met with their Minister of Information. This was a long-planned meeting. Was on his calendar for quite some time, certainly had nothing to do with recent events, and was principally designed to talk about strategies for better strategic communications in a very dynamic information environment, media relations processes and procedures. And I think that the Undersecretary Stengel was also going to use the meeting as an opportunity to talk about counterterrorism messaging, particularly in the campaign against ISIL. I would fully expect, although I don't have a readout of the meeting, that Mr. Stengel would also pass along the same message that every other State Department official has been passing along in the wake of this weekend's events, which is, again, to urge calm and for tensions to be de-escalated and for the nations to work these issues out bilaterally. But that's not the purpose of the meeting. It was long scheduled and really was designed to be a professional meeting between two professional communicators.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.